The wait is over. Football is here, and so is DraftKings. DraftKings is now live in all 50 states. One app, every sport, nationwide. New DraftKings customers, sign up with code 2400, spend $5 to get $200 in rewards within 21 days. Includes all markets. That's code 2400 in partnership with DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut, call 888-789-7777. Or visit ccpg.org on behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas. Bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Void in Canada. Bet with DraftKings Sportsbook to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Or trade with DraftKings Predictions to get predictions dollars that expire in 1 year. Event contract trading involves risk of loss. Predictions offer void in New York. Non-withdrawable rewards issued as $50 click-to-claims every 7 days for 21 days. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer. Nationwide based on sportsbook predictions and free-to-play sports contest availability. Varies by state.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and as always, my co-host, Matt, is here with me. Matt, we are here to break down another week of Jets preseason coming up tomorrow night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Old nemesis Aaron Rodgers, most likely not going to be on the field, but probably in the building and going to be looking to send whatever rude remarks and shots and jaws and probably still shake hands and be excited to see some old teammates. We're going to be here to break it all down. We're going to break down some things from last week against the Buccaneers. An overall encouraging performance, I would say. I don't think there was anything that happened within that game that necessarily jumped out to me as earth-shatteringly concerning. Some things to watch going forward, but we'll get into that. Matt, I want to throw things to you. What was your kind of initial takes from first preseason, and what are we looking forward to this week, or where do you want to start with this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent showing. Like, I don't care about results or anything like that. I just don't want people to look like they don't belong. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like most of the team looked like they belonged, right? You have Bailey getting chipped in his first action, getting
more
extra,
than once.
More than once. He got the offensive line kind of looking solid. The quarterbacks is something that everybody's gonna have their mind on. Club, you know, didn't look bad. It was pretty average, I would say. He did lead 2 scoring drives, which is great. But I mean, I wasn't like overly impressed where I'd be like, oh my God, we got to get this guy more starts. Get him in the first team right now. Geno is still our starter. And I know that some people will be like, well, you know, this year doesn't matter anyways. Why don't we just, throw Club out there and see what he has, you know, so we can get a good draft pick and see what we have in Club. And I'm like, no.
Because I think Garrett Wilson would punch a hole in his locker if that happened.
No. That's not something that anybody other than a fan would think. Like, this team needs wins. They need to have that kind of season where they have some kind of upswing, because another season like the last couple, handful, and it's going to be ugly. In the locker room, outside the locker room, just about everywhere, it's not going to be fun. I feel like we came close to you know, everybody jumping off a cliff after this last season. It only by the grace of God that we found some kind of hope in the season being a little different. The fact that we have 3 first round picks, I feel like that helps a little bit.
That it does.
So, you know, there's a lot riding on this season. Other than just seeing what we have in Klubnik. Klubnik will get his shot, all right? I don't have any illusions that Geno is going to, you know, play the entire year healthy. I doubt that is going to be the case. So I have a feeling we will see Klubnik at some point. getting some real game reps. So I'm not, I'm okay with that. I don't think we need to throw him into the fire right away. In fact, I'd kind of prefer to not throw him into the fire. I would want him to get as much developmental time as possible. And really, if there is a reason for him to come on the field, I want it to be in a situation where he is comfortable and ready, not just to start the season just to see what he is, because I don't even think he is what he is just yet.
No, there's still a lot that Cade Klubnik can improve on, and I genuinely do believe that. We've been very critical of him as a prospect. We've been very critical of him of the draft pick as a whole, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm changing my opinions off one preseason game. Matt, I actually want to pose a question to you, and I want to be as fair and as honest as I can. And one of the things that we talked about last week was, what were we hoping to see from Klubnik? Was a smooth operation, feel like you understand the plays, that you're not lagging behind, or that people are struggling to get lined up because you don't know where they were. I thought that was fine. I didn't really have any issues with him there. That actually impressed me, really, how smooth and comfortable he looked like with the plays. Granted, it's basic. Granted, it's preseason week one, but it's still a new system, and Clemson's system is the farthest thing from pro style. So I'm not going to sit there and not give him credit for that. The question I want to pose to you, Matt, what's our opinion of that performance without two amazing catches from Garrett Wilson?
Probably, you know, less than stellar. We probably wouldn't. There wouldn't be much talk about him getting starting reps,
right? I want to pose you a second question, Matt, because again, all things being equal, we're grading things in a vacuum. Garrett's going to be there for Geno too. I'm not trying to make a 1-to-1 comparison either way, but in your evaluation of the quality of a throw, were either of those two plays on third downs good throws from Klubnik or well-placed footballs?
No, that was Garrett Wilson being Garrett Wilson.
That was Garrett Wilson being Garrett Wilson. And that's what I can't get over. And I don't know why anyone seems to want to bother to mention that he was missing high all night.
Mm-hmm.
All night missing high. And it was because he wasn't stepping into his throws, because he's still a little skittish in the pocket. He's still a little skittish to the rush. He had a play on second and goal in the first drive that ended in a field goal where O-line has given him all day. There's no reason he needs to move or evade. And clock in his head runs out. He starts rolling out to his right. It ends up being a throwaway. You could have made something happen there. You could have stayed calm. You could have waited for somebody to break open. It's small areas, tight in the red zone. It's hard to cover for that long. All you need is a little bit of space. You could have been a little more comfortable there. Am I going to be that critical over one play? No. But consistently all night, he was missing high. And he was missing high badly. And it got to the point where after that second and goal, on third and goal, he missed really high trying to go to Garrett in the red zone again. And Garrett didn't even jump for it. Like, if you go back and look at the play, Garrett's like, I've seen this freaking movie before. Like, I'm not wasting my time. It's preseason, bro. Sorry. And it wasn't even close. That needs to really improve. That is an issue that we had with him as a prospect. Evaluating him was the overall arm talent. We thought he was generally accurate, but not deadly so. So how is that going to progress? And is that going to be better going into next week? That's what I want to see.
Yeah. I think that's fair. He's not a finished product by any means possible. Right. So it is what it is. He's where he is, and he'll hopefully improve, but he's going to have to do that on as the second string.
Honestly, and I'm going to die on this hill whether the Jets do it or not, I think they still need to bring in a veteran. And I'm not saying that veteran has to be the QB2 for the entire season. I think that you bring in somewhat of a veteran of a middle ground between Cade Klubnik and Geno Smith, that if, gosh forbid, with the way the world loves to just spit in the face of this football team, something happens to Geno early in the year and it's week two and he has to miss 2 weeks, your season's still alive. You started with the show with this, Matt. You have something to play for. You still want wins. You're trying to build a foundation. You're trying to reset your culture. You're trying to save your job if you're Aaron Glenn. You cannot afford to get yourself into a 1-3 or 1-4 hole to start the season, because Cade Klubnik is not up to speed yet, because it's unfair to expect him to be. where if you could bring in some sort of a more experienced veteran QB2 in the middle ground, then if that happens to Geno, gosh forbid, that veteran can still hold things down somewhat more effectively than you would expect Cade Klubnik to do. And you wouldn't have to alter your offense to that point.
Who is that vet?
Anybody, Matt. I don't care. Like, I genuinely don't care. It doesn't matter who it is. I'm not sitting there saying I'm scouting the bottom of the barrel of what of old veteran quarterbacks are out on the market right now. I don't care. Any of them that have starting experience, that know how to run an operation, that you don't have to limit your playbook for, as long as their arms aren't completely wet noodles, that's all I need. Because I'm not expecting them to be the savior. And after week 8, week 9, whatever it might be, if the same situation happens and somebody's got to start a few games in Geno's absence, well, now you let Klubnik start. And then you have the veteran as that you brought in to be the QB2 for him and give yourself insurance in even beyond that, and have that veteran help prepare Klubnik going into the week of, okay, we're going to be a starter. This is how we're going to start. We're going to let Geno totally focus on rehab. He's not even going to have to worry about it. You, as Klubnik, you focus on the starter. Veteran we brought in, you help him along in the week, get him ready to hold down the fort. That's a lot more fair to ask out of Cade Klubnik in the back half of the season than it is in the early half of the season. And I just, for a team that's been very adamant that they are not just throwing in the towel for this year, that seems incredibly short-sighted and like a duct tape on a patch that could rip at any second.
All right, well, here would be my counterpoint. One, anybody that's left out there is probably not better than Zappy, who we already have as a vet presence, and he's not good. Like, he was probably the only one that played last week that I could comfortably say he did not belong out there. He did not look like he was, you know, a pro. I'm going through a list right now. I can't find a single person that I would probably take. Other than,
are you
maybe
purely looking on the unrestricted free agent market right now?
Yes.
Because it's going to be roster cuts. We're going to have waivers. You're going to have the option of throwing a 7th round pick to somebody who's on a roster that might not be immediately available that we're not even thinking of. I'm not even saying the obvious names. Everyone's going to say Andy Dalton 1,000 times. We've heard Tanner McKee. We've heard Will Levis. We've heard, you know, whoever. It might not even be any of those guys. I'm not saying I know who it is or who it should be. But if you're purely looking at the unrestricted free agent market, I think you're missing options that might be available behind the scenes. And we have seen nothing else from Darren Mugi, at least in year one. I'm excited to see what year two looks like. He's been active in the waiver wire to try and find and fill in the gaps in his team that he wasn't able to do in free agency or the draft, where we went into all summer last year going, dear God, this defensive tackle room after Quinnen Williams is horrible. And then it was like 3 weeks into August, all of a sudden Harrison Phillips and Juwan Briggs showed up. And we're like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. Like, okay, cool. We're great. Problem solved. We don't got to worry anymore. Wow, just like that. Okay, cool. Like, for all we know, that move could still exist at backup quarterback. And just because it might not be as obvious right now, I don't think one should rule it out. And that includes, like, the Jets shouldn't rule it out either. Like, please be available watching the market. Please be on the phones. Please give the investment that if you want the investment in Cade Klubnik to work, then don't potentially throw him to the fire right away when it's unfair to expect him to do that.
And this would be my second counterpoint, is that where the Jets offense is right now is kind of the perfect situation for a rookie quarterback to kind of, you know, ease in, because he is easing in with a lot of talent around him at offensive line and with weapons. So it's not exactly, you know, the hottest fire we've ever thrown a rookie into. And I think even if he were to get some starts or a good amount of playing time, he would be okay. And I don't think it would ruin him. That's not to say I want him to, or he should, but I think he would be okay and fine. And I don't really care about 7th round picks. So if we want to like toss that to somebody for somebody that's kind of just stored,
we're
on
also second in the waiver wire order this year.
great. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I feel like they would have done it by now.
Agreed, but then again, that's what we said about defensive tackle last year, is that I guess they're just fine with this. And then we saw them do something. So I'm still holding out hope. Call it copium, call it blind optimism, call it whatever you want. But I think there still could be a move to be made. And I understand and quite honestly agree with everything that you said in terms of the situation that Klubnik would be walking into, that I don't think that the team is not equipped to support him, that there isn't weapons and blocking and scheme around him to assist with that. But I think if you're only viewing it from that microscope view, will this hurt Cade Klubnik's development, having to play with the rest of the Jets? No. But what about the rest of the Jets' development having to play with Cade Klubnik? That's the other half of the coin that we have to remember. There's still young players on this team we want to improve. We want to see Membu in year two be the player we think he can be. We want to see Garrett Wilson finally unlocked and take over in the way that he can be. We need to see if the investment in A.D. Mitchell was worth anything. We need to see, once he's healthy, what's Kenyon Sadiq going to look like in this offense? Is Breece finally going to have a chance to make up for the extension we just gave him? If you're looking at it from the just Cade Klubnik sense, I get what you're saying and I do not disagree. But I don't think that that's fair to the rest of the team's development too. And I don't want to spend forever going back and forth on should they add a QB2 or not, because ultimately it seems like you said they probably would have done it by now, especially at quarterback. You'd think you'd want to get somebody in and know the system a little more concretely than a defensive tackle at the last second. But man, it's worrying. I can't pretend that it isn't. And I feel bad for Cade Klubnik in the scenario that that's going to happen to him if it does.
So here's my prediction: is after tomorrow, if he doesn't look like he can solidify that quarterback two position, I think they do make a move after that, just to, you know, get somebody else in. So they could feel comfortable. But it seems like they're letting him, you know, giving him all the chances in the world to kind of earn that spot.
If the only other guys competing are Zappe and Brady Cook, then yeah.
Well, like, I don't think it's him against them. I think it's more him against himself.
So then how can he lose?
By not looking like he could be a quarterback too, then they would just get somebody else.
Possible. I see what you're saying. Let's get into that specifically. When and how much is he going to play? Because we did get word today that Geno is going to start this week in Pittsburgh. That is confirmed. We're expecting to see the Jets starters, I would expect, for a little bit longer than we did this previous week, where it was just two drives, I believe, each on each side of the ball. I'm expecting close to maybe a whole quarter, if not longer, that you're going to really try and get some experience out of them. And it's for Geno in particular, where is that line of, we need to get you game reps, you need to get reps with this offense, chemistry, being on the field, being with this offensive line, being with, you know, Frank in the headset calling plays to you in live action, versus you're 35 or 36 years old, you've been in the league for 13 years at this point, you've been in how many training camps, huddles, starts, this is nothing new, and do we need to run the risk of seeing a ton of Geno? So if you made me guess, Matt, I think the rest of the Jets offense plays more longer this week than Geno does. I think you're going to see Klubnik get another chance with the ones probably halfway through the first quarter.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think they're going to push Geno that hard in his first, you know, game reps. It wouldn't really follow the ramping up that they've kind of been trying out this training camp. I would say maybe Geno for a quarter, and then probably Klubnik the rest of the way, pretty much. Or maybe somebody else in the fourth quarter in the second half if Klubnik's not looking that great.
If you made me bet the exact split, I think all of the Jets starters play through the entirety of the first quarter on both sides of the ball. I think halfway through the first quarter, they pull Geno. Klubnik finishes the quarter with the ones and also finishes quarter two with the twos. We see Cook or Zappe starting the second half.
No, I think that's fair. I would like to see a little bit more of Clay.
I would too, but if this is your QB2, as if that's what you're planning to do now, and we know what Brady Cook and Bailey Zappi are at this point, then again, how much do you want to balance getting Klubnik the experience he needs versus jeopardizing the role you're going to need him to fill if you're banking on him doing it?
True. All right. I mean, I think that's fair.
There's a way to solve this, and I am going to be petty and mention it's by getting another veteran quarterback in the building. But
there is that, but yep, alas, here we are.
Let's turn to the defense, Matt. This is going to be a bit more fun. We're getting some guys back in the building off injury. Tavondre Sweat, defensive tackle, a new addition, trade from Jermaine Johnson from the Tennessee Titans, back practicing. His first time practicing with the Jets, I believe, in training camp. I think he was there a little bit in OTAs, did a little bit of light work, but hasn't been back for camp yet until this week. Back activated, back practicing, and from all reports was already making up movement and blowing up the offensive line in the run game and doing what we expect. Joseph Osai, defensive lineman, defensive end, also back in the fold, doing the same thing, setting the edge, being an early down presence that it is going to be, from his own mouth, moving between outside linebacker and defensive end. So, Matt, there's Alex Anzalone. It's Joseph Osai this year,
pretty much. But you know, yeah, it's nice to have, you know, almost the full assortment, right? Other than Enagbare,
and Enagbare is like the last one who had been practicing, has been dealing with a minor injury. I want to say ankle, if I'm remembering correctly, but I could be wrong on that. Didn't seem like anything too concerning, but they're expecting him back. I would say probably next week we'll see him get back in the fold. But man, it would be pretty fantastic to go down to Tennessee with an offensive line with a lot of questions on it, and everything I've seen from every reporter or fan or anybody that's been around Titans camp is, holy crap, this offensive line is awful. Be pretty great to have a fully loaded D-line ready to go in Nashville.
Yes, it definitely would. Do we know if Sweat's playing? I haven't heard anything about
that. I have not heard anything either. If you made me guess, I'm going to say no, but I would really like him to. That would be a really encouraging sign, even if it's kind of like the same thing with Geno, but in reverse, where the starters play the whole first quarter and we see Sweat for the first couple of drives, or maybe only here and there in the first or second rotation on the defensive line. You know, anything is better than nothing. Just get him on the field and get him used to the contact and the speed again, and let him do what he's capable of doing. That'd be great.
Yeah, I could see that sparingly, but there.
I think we'll do the same thing with Osai. I expect, crazy as it is, I think we're going to see an absolute ton of David Bailey.
I hope so too, because he's fun to watch.
I think they're going to, I think this is going to be the game where it's like, all right, kid, like, go get used to it. Go light some people up. We're go unleash it. We're not going to hold you back. You're not just going to get eight plays. Like, go play 20. Go get after some people. And I'm, long shot, hot take, as we sit here and predict David Bailey's first sack comes against the Steelers.
That'd be nice. Against I'm forgetting the...
They have Fautoni with one tackle.
Fautoni, yes.
I love and adore and always will. And am happy with the Jets' offensive line as it is constructed, do not get me wrong. But one of my favorite draft prospects ever in Troy Fautoni. It was just a joy watching.
So it would be, you know, a little... fun to see Bailey going up against him and seeing how that works out.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm predicting his first sack as well. He showed a lot of that burst that everybody's been talking about. You know, he didn't hit home, but he was definitely being looked at by the offensive line to take him out. So if he can continue that, where he is getting that extra attention, it's going to give a lot of confidence to everybody else around him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving a little bit further down the line as a whole, I do want to mention Darryl Jackson. We talked about him last week, the rookie from Florida State. I thought he had a good showing. Nothing immediately popping besides just his presence on the field. The dude is massive and so long, and his hands are huge. And it's clear to see why he's going to be built for this type of Aaron Glenn defensive line, a guy who can be a five tech, who can be a three tech on heavy sets, who could be a one if you need to, and fill the Tavondre Sweat role. I'm really excited to see him continue to progress, but really encouraging sign to have things started. And to round things off, Matt, something we didn't talk about pre-show before we hit record, but I do want to bring it up. Man, Inez Cooper was kicking butt.
Oh, yeah. He was looking mean out there.
Mm-hmm. In the run game, moving on contact, and that's exactly what we saw when we were, you know, scouting him after the draft, and we went back and checked his tape. You know, there is a really solid base there. There's a powerful man that can move people where he wants to move them. And if you can continue to develop that and round out your pass blocking skills that are pretty good, just need a little more refinement and match up. You know, you're not the most fleet of foot ever. You round out that, you get your hands right, you can be a solid backup guard as a 6th round rookie. That's a dang good find by Darren Mooji and Aaron Glenn.
Yeah. I mean, his biggest issues that I had was, you know, like you said, not the most fleet of foot. His pad level, he played a little high.
Mm-hmm.
His hand placement, he kind of left his chest open sometimes. But there's enough there to develop into possibly some decent depth.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is. And if you can get, again, if you can have your first guard off the bench be a 6th round rookie that you feel confident about and you're not worried about that, then that's a really good sign for the future. And heck, maybe continue to grow, to continue to develop. It's not like they signed Dylan Parham to some crazy extension forever. Maybe there's a starting role to be had in the future.
Yeah, it's not out of the question.
Well, we'll definitely get a chance to see it again this week. I'm going to be keeping my eyes locked on the trenches, as most games that I watch on this team is going to be right back there again, except for when Klubnik's on the field. Then we're going to be checking to see where those passes actually land. Speaking of quarterbacks throwing passes where they want to go, Matt, let's get to our continuation of college quarterbacks. We're on to our 9th and 10th in the list of our 12 that we narrowed it down to. I'm going to let you start here with an unheralded player that I've seen some people mention and have in very high regard, and I've seen other people never hear of. So talk about CJ Bailey at NC State.
Yeah, so, I mean, we already talked about Sellers and the physical specimen that he is. Bailey is up there as in terms of physicality that he kind of brings to the table. It's definitely not at Sellers' level. He is mobile. He can make you miss. He can change directions and not lose that much momentum. He can run through arm tackles because he's a 6'6", 220. The guy can move, and he can really, you know, extend plays with that athleticism. But again, he's not at the same level as Sellers. He's probably Sellers light, if I had to say anything. But
not at the same level, but different.
Different,
yes. I'll get into that in a little bit.
I like that he, you know, he's got the prototypical size, fluid motion. He plays from structure. He works through his progressions. He navigates the pocket with poise. He doesn't really bail at the first sign of pressure. He's started as a true freshman, I believe. So he's had something like 20 something starts. So he's got a good amount of experience going into this year. And that's always something that you want to see. You want to see a trajectory as well, that, you know, a little better here, a little better there, keep getting better. And between his first year and second year, there's definitely a little bit of improvement. So this year, I would definitely like to see a bigger jump. And if he can do that, I think that would do wonders for his draft stock. Because like I said, he has the prototypical size. He's got a good enough arm. He needs to work on his release a little bit. Sometimes it looks like he's just shot putting the ball. And he can definitely work on that. He could probably gain some arm strength. He's already got decent arm as is. But he could probably get even stronger if he, you know, works on that release and throwing motion. I wish I could say he sees the field amazingly. Mm-hmm. I think he could definitely improve there. I already said how he's, you know, pretty good at maneuvering and feeling comfortable in the pocket. So if he has that down, I think he can then move to being comfortable doing that while keeping his eyes downfield and reading everything in front of him. I don't want him to get locked on and kind of miss everything else around him. And he's got a lot of room for improvement, and he's got a high ceiling as well. So, you know, we're seeing how this draft class is really filled to the brim with talent. You got the top guys that we've mentioned, but then you have a lot of guys that, you know, have the potential to also be pretty high picks if they take that next step. And Bailey is a guy that could take that next step.
Yeah, no, he absolutely could. He's juiced up to the gills with tools. Absolutely loaded up with tools. 6'6", like you said, it looks like it on tape. Like, he looks big. He looks tall. He looks clearly able to see over the line and be aware of what's going on around him. He's listed at 213 in his most recent listing. I do think he looks a bit slender at that 6'6". It might be a bit more than 213. I could believe 220 around where you were saying, but not in the same vein, again, comparatively to Lenora Sellers. And I think that's an obvious immediate comparison in the type of player that you're evaluating, of two guys that are loaded up with tools, that have the ability to make plays with their legs and their arms, that have prototypical size to go with it. Sellers is a bit more compact and muscular. Sellers is like 240, 245. And I also think that Sellers is a lot more twitchy and explosive in short areas than Bailey is. And the thing with Bailey is just his legs are so dang long. He's got such a high cut waist and these super long legs that he's a long strider, and that doesn't allow him to make the quick, subtle movements, but he moves faster and quicker than you would expect by being able to cover ground with those long strides. And I also thought, Matt, you've heard me talk about this before with running backs. He had the independent contractor hips where he can keep his upper body faced and squared and ready to throw and be moving his lower body and shuffling and twisting his legs to avoid pressure. It messed some guys up that were trying to hit him in the pocket. He was toying with him. And then the second he sees a lane, he's got enough speed and burst that he can make something happen with it. Is it to the level of a Lenora Sellers? No. I don't think the top end speed is quite the same. The explosion and twitch is definitely not the same. The tackle breaking ability for me was really, really lacking, but more than enough in terms of movement skills, especially at the size for Bailey. I'm going to counter you a little bit, Matt. I really liked his arm and I really liked his release. I think the issue with him in terms of placement and accuracy is that I think he's better at reading space and matchups than he is at reading coverage. And that I think he is, when he's going against man and all he's got to do is just watch this defender on this receiver and did he get open or not? No issues. Can see it. He anticipates it well. It's on time. I don't have any problems with that. It's zones can get a little bit tricky for him. And that was really the time when I saw the accuracy suffer. But overall, I thought it literally, I have written down in my notes, effortlessly accurate. Balls on people's face masks more times than not, even in uncompromising situations where feet might not be there, pressure might be coming, you might have to be twisted awkward, like I said, and you're still moving and shuffling to make a throw and retreating in the pocket, but not outright just bailing in the pocket, just slightly moving back and buying time and then still able to hit the target on time with pace. When he unloads and he's trying to really drive the ball, especially down over the deep middle, it's pretty. It's really, really pretty. The ball jumps out of his hands. He's got a quick flick of his wrist. It reminds me of Lamar at Louisville a little bit, especially when he's going over the middle with just how quick the ball jumps out of his hand. I really, really think there's potential to be developed and develop the other clubs in the bag and the arm slots and changing your angles. I do think he's a bit, every throw looks the same right now, but I liked his arm a lot. The issue for me more than anything else is that he's going to have to figure out how to play in a pro style offense. Cause right now he's not. Yeah. It's a lot of half field reads. It's a lot of run game. It's a lot of play action and bootlegs. And he's not ever really asked that often to read the whole field. And when he's asked to read the whole field in critical situations on third and long on gotta have it downs, those were the times that I really felt like the monkey with the cymbals in the head was going off and he didn't know what was going on, where the wheels were turning, but they weren't going anywhere. That's like the only time I saw that happen. And I'm not here to say he can't improve in that area and that can't get better in the league and get better over time, as I really do think it can, but it's not something that I can say is a developed skill right now. Overall, though, if you're going to bet on somebody, I don't blame you for betting on this guy. I mean, he's got poise in the pocket. He's willing to take hits. He's not scared. He makes people miss in the pocket. He's dangerous when he does and can create with his legs when he needs to. Can hit any area of the field with his arm. I think he's more than enough accurate. He completed over 70% of his passes last year, let alone just from the tape by the numbers. He's been excessively accurate. There's a lot to bet on with him. And if you're going to be looking to invest in a player to grow in the future, candidly, I have Lenoris Sellers rated higher, but it's not by much, Matt.
Yeah, no, I also have Sellers decently ahead. I mean, when you look at last year, the best teams he played against, he did not show up. Against Notre Dame, did not show up. Against Miami, didn't show up. Against Duke, didn't show up.
Did not play well against Duke, no.
So he needs to take advantage of the chances he gets. And he's not going to have that many of them. This is the ACC. So there's very few teams that, you know, are really top notch. I don't know what their schedule is like this year, but I can't imagine them having more than maybe like three games that are really going to kind of solidify his draft stock if he can show up in those games. But, you know, like we said, if he can take that next step, there's really no limit to where his draft stock could take him.
No, there is nothing with him that I saw, at least, that I don't think is unfixable in any capacity, either with time, either with coaching, either with reps and experience and the right, you know, quarterback coach drilling in your ear. I think all of the flaws with him right now can be fixed over time. There is nothing that is preventing him from reaching that ceiling outright. I'm excited to see where he goes. And one thing for me, especially evaluating Sellers, I give Sellers so much of the benefit of the doubt that the situation and coaching that he's going to receive in the league is going to be better than he got in college. And for a guy that is that talented and already has enough of a natural baseline of playing the position, the feel in the pocket and the things you can't teach and feel for space and knowing when to throw the ball and throwing it consistently accurately without really having to try. If you're the type of quarterback that really has to dial in and aim and I got to be perfectly set to get the ball where it's going, it's like you're never going to be that way 9 times out of 10. You're lucky when you get those opportunities in the league to have everything perfectly set up for you to keep your mechanics clean and aim and throw. Sometimes it's just got to be guys open, throw it and hope that it hits the target. And the guys that can just be guys open, throw it and it hits them in the face mask every time, those are the guys that survive in the league. I got that feeling with Bailey a little bit. I'm not going to lie, Matt. Maybe even more so than Sellers, to where, yeah, if that's the baseline we're starting from, or we're not starting from the Anthony Richardson timeline, comparing Sellers like we did at the beginning, and same thing here with Bailey, you're starting at a much higher baseline than that, to where I think, again, get him in the league with proper NFL coaching and an NFL system, and is he going to have to learn how to do it? Yes, but I kind of get the feeling that it's more he hasn't been exposed than he hasn't been able to.
Yeah, I mean, but there's only one way to find out whether he's able to.
Yeah, and we'll see a lot this year. We'll see if it is the same type of offense, and even if it is, are you cleaner in your reads of coverage? Are you cleaner in your decision-making? Are you cleaner under pressure when you have to make those full field reads? There will be opportunities to see the improvement and know going into next season and eventually into the draft, is this going to be somebody you really want to bet on, or are they still quite a bit of ways in what they have to learn? I'm betting on the former, to be honest. I'm more impressed the more I think about it with him. I'm really excited to see what this year looks like, because if he takes that leap, he's going to be right in the conversation with every other guy at the top of the draft.
I think so as well.
All right, Matt, let's get to another guy that I've been really, really waiting all week to talk to you about. And that's John Mateer at Oklahoma. I am so torn with this player, Matt. I am so torn with this player because there is so much in John Mateer that I absolutely adore. There is so much in John Mateer that I think is some of the best out of any quarterbacks in this entire class of the 10 that we've watched so far. First and foremost, the moxie, the leadership, and the attitude on the field. There is a difference with him. There is a difference in the way his teammates play around him. There's a difference in the way that he plays. Despite being 6'1", 220, whatever it is, the contact balance, the willingness to take contact, the willingness to deliver contact, the willingness to put his body on the line for his team and go and ball out time and time again, it bleeds through the rest of that team. I love that about him. In terms of pure miles per hour and how fast you can throw a ball in a straight line trying to, you know, throw it through the side of a barn, is he top three of the guys we've watched so far? Like, I think he might be top three. He's got a legit arm. Can hit any level of the field, no issue. Thrives with anticipation, can absolutely murder tight windows, is aggressive to the nth degree, and has the RPMs on the arm to make up for it. I love his ability as a runner. He is a full-blown, legit running threat. He is a mobile quarterback through and through. I do not care. He is explosive. He is elusive. He makes people miss. He runs through tackles. He sets up defenders in the run game like a running back. He makes jump cuts behind the line of scrimmage. He will lower his shoulder and run through people on the goal line. He can break out and makes 51-yard rushing touchdowns in the SEC. This is a real, legit, legit runner. And despite his smaller stature at 6'1", he has got a muscular, thick build. He is, again, not scared of contact. He takes contact. He's got excellent contact balance, even as a runner, also within the pocket when guys are trying to nip at his legs. He's able to pull himself out of it and stay up. Rumored at Oklahoma that he's a weight room warrior, squats over 400 pounds that you wouldn't expect for a guy at 6'1", 220. This is a legit for real athlete. I think he's got good field vision. I think he makes good decisions with the ball. I think that he is an awesome leader. I think that he's a great runner. I think that he has got a serious top-notch arm. And Matt, I think he's my 8th ranked quarterback out of 10.
Eighth. I would have to sit down for ranking, but
you know why he's 8th? Because his throwing motion is going to get him killed in the NFL. It is sidearm to a fault. When it's over the middle, when it's I need to do the quick slant or hit the backside dig, and I move back and I just need to hit the quick sidearm, flick over the middle like Matt Stafford. Yeah, the ball, it's like it's shot out of a cannon. It's on in a flash. It's right where it needs to go. Tight window, doesn't matter. Love it. Anytime he has to put any amount of air on the football, and it's not something that's like 45, 50 yards in the air, he can't do it consistently. He just flat out can't do it because he tries to sidearm the ball. And if you are sidearming and your elbow, if you're throwing a football, your elbow never gets parallel or even with your shoulder to in the raise of the ball as the ball is coming up around as you are going to throw. If you never get the ball that high to where it's not even over your head at all or even with your head, and you're already 6'1". The launch point from where that ball is coming out is significantly lower than most other players. And so the angle that you're having to put on that ball and the touch that you're having to put on it in order to drop it in the bucket properly in a touch throw of a 25-yard throw over the middle between a safety and a linebacker, or if it's a slot fade and the receiver is got to step on his man, but he's not completely burned him to where you can just lead it out in front of him and let him run. You got to kind of drop it in the bucket. Those sort of throws, he can't do it, Matt. He can't do it. He either throws a line drive that hits the defender in the back of the head, or the ball's 4 feet too far out in front of the receiver. It's this duck little moon ball because he's having to underarm sidearm and throw it up and then hope it curves back down, where taller quarterbacks or other quarterbacks, maybe not even taller, but quarterbacks with more natural throwing motions that get more elevation in their arm, the ball is being launched from a higher point. So it's not having to take a higher angle at launch in order to then come and drop back down. And it's a more consistent way to throw. I can't tell you that he's never going to fix that. Because there's times when you see him make plays on the run. He had a throw against Michigan that makes my jaw drop every time I see it, where he beats a free runner, comes at his legs, runs out of it, stays up. Guy grabbing at his ankles is able to stay up, moves out of the pocket to his right. Guy comes open, running down the field on the broken play. And Mateer just uncorks this thing over arm, 35, 45 yards down the field, hits the receiver dead in stride, goes on to receivers down to like the 5 yard line. They score two plays later. If he can just do that in the pocket, Matt, I think this guy's a starting NFL quarterback. Like it's really hard, despite the team association, for me not to just watch him and think this is Baker Mayfield all over again. If he can do that consistently. I have not seen him do that consistently yet. I can't say I've never seen it. I can't say he's totally incapable. I can't say there's no physical, mechanical way that he can do it, because he's put it on tape, but he's put it on tape like three times. And all the other times when he's clean in the pocket and he has the opportunity, and or it's cover three and I got a 3-by-1 set and it's verticals and I'm trying to throw the seam route and I need to put a little air on the ball to get it over the linebacker, but drop it in with the safety and still have pace. Well, he threw an interception on that ball against Michigan because he put too much air under it and it was behind the receiver because he couldn't launch it at the proper angle or chose not to. If John Mateer does not fix that, Matt, he's not going to last in the league, period. He just cannot hit enough throws that are required in an NFL passing offense to stay consistent and be in the NFL. It's just not going to happen. If he does correct that and he adds some more, not even completely changing his motion, I don't need him to completely change his motion. If he can just learn to have some other clubs in the bag besides the driver and fit in the nine iron and work in ways to change your arm slot, where a lot of times we talk about that for guys where their arm is really over the top and we need them to bring it down to avoid the defensive lineman jumping up and raising their hands. This is the exact opposite. Now it's you need to learn, Mateer, to raise your arm on certain throws to heighten your launch point and make it easier for you to put touch on the ball than what you're just trying to do, which is sidearm, backyard toss of a football, expecting it to go up in the air and then drop back down perfectly. It is killer for me, Matt, because that is like of all the guys we've watched so far, all of them, that is the only time that I have gotten to the point where I go, that's a deficiency. And we talk about deficiencies versus weaknesses a lot. You can improve a weakness. You can't improve it. You cannot improve a deficiency. This is a deficiency right now. If it does not improve, which there's a chance that it can. We've seen people improve their throwing motion and add arm slots. And as they get older and more developed and consistent, it's not impossible. But you are so dialed into this sidearm stuff right now, John Mateer, to a fault, to where that looks like it is naturally how you want to throw the football. If you can't overcome that, I don't think there's a way you survive in the league. If you do, I think you could be a starter.
So, yes. I completely agree. Besides being Happy Gilmore with a football, I would say that maybe the next biggest issue I have is his streakiness with decision making. Because I see a gunslinger. I see a guy that takes a lot of chances, and it's a fun experience when he's on. He's on, but he also takes a lot of chances that end up as interceptions. Like he had something like 11 interceptions last year, and that's in a limited exposure because he did get hurt.
Right, and that's the other biggest wild card, is that he had suffered a thumb injury to his throwing hand during the year and played through it, and his first game back, he was awful. So, yeah, he had 11 interceptions that year, last year, Matt. I think four of them came in that first game back after the thumb surgery.
Yeah, I think so. Injuries also, is something that you got to look at, especially
but you're 6'1", 220.
6'1", 220. Like,
and you run yourself into contact a lot, and they use you like a fullback on the goal line at Oklahoma, and you love it. And that's the other half of it for me, where I love that aspect about it. I love that he's a football player first and a quarterback second. I think the team absolutely bleeds and breeds off that and feeds off of it. And it really does permeate through the entire rest of the offense and rest of the team as a whole. But man, it's concerning. I'm not going to tell you it's not. If that's my starting quarterback and I need him to survive 17 games in the NFL, like, no, please get down.
Yeah, I can't see any, GM handing him the franchise with the way he plays, the reckless abandonment. Yeah, it's fun, and yeah, it's exactly what you want, mentality wise. But as far as longevity and safety as a draft pick, no, it's not something that is really conducive to his draft stock being that high. And in the end, I think that is what's going to sink him and make him a day two guy.
Right now, I think it's end of day two. I don't even know if I would even say it's early day two. And I love this player. I love watching John Mateer. I've loved him since last season when we were looking at quarterbacks before the fall even ended. And I watched a little bit of John Mateer. I've loved watching him play. That does not mean I think where he is in his current state is going to be conducive to the NFL. And it's harder for me to envision the growth in his evaluation and his progression going the way that I need it to versus all of the other guys that I've already watched. As I was sitting down, I've been trying to rank them as I go and keep a building list. So by the time we get to the end of this, I have a preseason top 12 that I can edit along through the season. And as we kept going, I kept going through it. And I keep finding these guys. It's like Mestemaker, all the talent in the world, first year starter and looked like it. That's going to get better. Most likely that's going to get better with time. That's something that we expect him to improve. Sellers, more consistent in your accuracy in the short and intermediate down to down basis. You have the physical tools to do that. Hopefully your blocking's better. Even if it's not, I think that's something you can get better in the pros. Bailey, a lot of the same things. Really, really high on Mensa, really high on Drake Lindsey. Don't have too many questions on those guys. Dante Moore and Arch Manning, kind of more in the middle. And I get to Mateer and it's like, I want so much to bet on you, but you're 6'1", you're 220, you already have been hurt in college, you run and play like a maniac, and you can't throw a touch because you do not have the arm motion capability consistently enough to do it. That doesn't work in the league. I wish it did, but it doesn't.
It does not. Yeah, but it's still going to be fun to watch. And
it's going to be a blast, and I want so bad for him to prove me wrong. Come out this next season, take the time with the injury and go back and watch your own tape and see where you struggled. And I don't need John Mateer to come out with a brand new throwing motion. I don't, because when it's over the middle, when it's the slants and the digs and he can whip it with that sidearm release, I mean, Matt, it's unguardable. The ball moves so fast. There's nothing that middle zone defenders can do. The ball is screaming past their ear. Keep that. I love that. Keep that. That'll play in the league when it's those type of throws. The other type of throws that matter too, those you can't hit, those you got to get better on. And if you do, I'll be the first one here to cheer you on and say, yeah, let's see what John Mateer does in the league. If not, yeah, I'm going to be really worried.
See, I could see him being like a late day two guy, you know, catching on somewhere, being a backup for a long time, and then he'll get like his shot.
Yep.
And he's going to impress a lot of people. And people are going to start looking at him like, wait a second. Where did this guy come from? It's like, he's always been there.
There is talent here. It's undeniable. It is absolutely undeniable. Call me insane, Matt. I think he's the best runner of the quarterbacks I've watched besides Sellers.
Yeah, I don't think that's too far off. Yeah, like, he's a legit threat.
I'm trying to remember. Was it Washington State where he was before Oklahoma? Is that correct? So when he was his last year at Washington State, he led the FBS in broken tackles for quarterbacks with 51.
Wow. I did not know that.
This is a real legit running quarterback where even if the passing may not be always completely and totally there, you can build an offense around him and you can find ways to be effective where, like you said, it might not be immediately. It might not be right away. But if John Mateer is a starter in year five, am I going to be shocked? No. Is he going to, if he's out of the league in year five, am I going to be shocked? Also, no.
Wow. Yeah. 53 missed tackles for
53, even more. I was wrong. 53, not 51.
Wow. That's wild.
That is legit numbers. And then he went to Oklahoma this past season and did the exact same thing in the SEC. He is a legit running threat. I don't think that's going to be different in the league. The explosion, the agility, the vision, he sets up defenders and presses the hole like a Pro Bowl running back. It's crazy. There is so I'm gonna keep harping on it. There's something to be had here. I don't want to quit him yet. I can't buy in yet, but I can't quit him yet either.
Yeah, and I think it's probably gonna be like that the entire year. we'll probably get to draft season and we'll still be thinking the same thing. Like, should we? I don't know if I can quit on him, but like, I didn't see enough to really say I should be confident, but it's still so good sometimes. It's just going to be a roller coaster, which probably makes him the best fit for us.
Yeah, no, and let's be honest here, Matt, the personality in the Moxie would kill in this city.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. He is, from a personality standpoint, he was built for this team.
Yeah, we've been kind of clamoring for a Baker Mayfield kind of guy for a long time.
Somebody who's not afraid to go up there and fight. Somebody who's not afraid to get loud and be, make their presence felt. And no disrespect to, you know, some of the guys the Jets have had leading them in the past and different ways that they do things. But with this fan base, with this city, with this environment, it's the blue collar, it's the hard work, it's we want the underdog, we want the grinders, and man, if that doesn't fit John Materia with T, I'm gonna be rooting for him. I really hope that we see a well improved John Materia 2.0 this year at Oklahoma, and if so, then I'm gonna be really excited about scouting him and seeing where he goes in the league.
I agree, it's gonna be fun.
That's going to be fun. All right. That's going to do it for this week, Matt. Why don't you let the people know where we can find you, and we'll go ahead and wrap this one up.
Matt, you can find me at ZazzyJet.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow the show at OKD Podcast. Keep it locked right here as we will be back next week to break down preseason week 2 against the Steelers. Look ahead to the Snoopy Bowl against the Giants. Preseason week 3, the finale, before we get ready for week 1. And we will round out the last of our 12 list of quarterbacks for the summer. Matt, I am going to implore you for a final end segment to go ahead between now and next week to start assembling your list so we can give our final preseason top 12 to end the show.
Oh, on it.
All right. Well, that'll do it. You guys keep a lock right here for that, and we'll be back right next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.